Welcome to Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria, with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
A warm welcome to Care in Action, the podcast where we explore powerful stories of change from across the globe. Today, I'm very honored to speak with Nehal El-Khoesni, chairperson of the Board of Trustees of Care Egypt Foundation. Like always, a short introduction. With over two decades of experience at the World Bank and a lifelong dedication to development, Nehal has been a driving force behind efforts to empower women, strengthen rural communities, and shape inclusive policies in Egypt. In this episode, we'll dive into her journey, so stay with us. It's for sure a conversation not to be missed. And my initial question, what drew you to politics, economics, and development work? Was there a moment, a sparking moment for that, Nehal?
Yeah, first, let me thank you for inviting me to this interesting podcast. It's a real honor. I'm really enjoying it. What drew my attention being young, a young girl at the 70s, the early 70s of last century, was the age of freedom, the age of youth revolution, the age of great ideas, philosophies, great minds, great directions. The stage was full of these ideas, so it was inevitable to be part of this. Also, in my country, there were great ideas, great hopes, great dreams. We had leaders who had we raised great expectations among the population, so we were full of enthusiasm and very interested to see our country booming politically after the 1952 revolution, where we moved from an episode to another episode where the country is free and we have a government that is national, that is watching our interests. So the whole stage was full of these enthusiastic ideas. There was no way I can miss it. So that was the beginning. Then this interest went to education, where I studied political science and economics at Cairo University. So that was the whole idea, the whole background was a great time. When I remember there was a great enthusiasm and excellent endeavors in front of us as youth, and we had high hopes. So there was no way to avoid this.
So Nehal, you were born and raised in Cairo, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. We had some tone problem because we are doing this podcast online, Vienna, Cairo. Sometimes the tone is not very clear. Did I understand it correctly that your father was encouraging you to study, to read, and to be enthusiastic about the future?
The whole point, not only reading and understanding, but also encouraging me to discuss what I got from what I read with him. And sometimes he gave me space to disagree with him. And that was fundamental in shaping my mind and my character in the future.
So this is quite impressive, and this is something that we share in common. You did not know that from me, but I also had a very strong and supportive father. So, and I have met many women who told me something similar. So this shows us that the parents, both of them, but especially in the daughter-father relation, an encouraging and supportive father who shows a young daughter that everything might be possible for her life is really something, a key ingredient maybe for later success. Would you say so?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. If I think of myself living the normal life at this time of my age, I mean, the early 70s of the last century, the environment was very different and very difficult for young women to engage in public life and to express their ideas and views politically or in the public arena.
And you became a very successful person in your life. You have worked for many years at the World Bank, right?
Yes.
You had really an impressive career. We have heard in your intro that you have worked for decades at the World Bank. So this is something quite impressive. But was it easy for you to join the World Bank? Did you have a lot of working experience before? How did you manage to do that?
Well, actually, surprisingly, you will be surprised, that was my first regular job. Before that, I had chosen because I married at a very early age. So I had to finish my studies first and then take care of my young children. So I started working really very late in my life, at the age of 40. And then my first regular job, yes. I was a fan of politics, economics, life in general, directions, ideas, great ideas, philosophical ideas, great minds. So reading was a very important part of my presence in life. I was always, until this moment, interested in life and very eager to contribute positively in any way I can. My first responsibility was my family, of course, and I found myself, I grew up a little bit with the two kids, so it was not easy. So I decided to, the first part of my life, to take care of my family and continue my education. But then when I started looking forward, when my children needed less time, they grew up. So I was looking for opportunities, and I worked at the American University for a short time just to acquaint myself with office work, since I didn't practice any office work before. And at that point of time, I spent some months, I don't remember how long, maybe six or so, and someone told me about this opportunity at the World Bank. It was my first interview ever. So I had to meet, I had to do some written exams and then interviews with the HR person and the office manager. And then I was shortlisted. And they told me that the country director would like to see you and interview you. So when he met with me, he was surprised that I never really worked before somewhere. And among the questions, actually, he liked languages. So he told me, you speak French, you speak Arabic, you speak English. So we will conduct this interview in three languages. And I agreed, which I did, of course, eloquently. I had a French education, basically, in schooling. My years of schooling were all French. So he liked my idea. He liked my ideas. He liked my enthusiasm. And he told me, why do you think you can succeed? And what can you give the organization? I told him, I'm sure that because I'm willing to add to life. So I'm sure that with this opportunity, I'm going to be a significant addition to this organization, because this is what I would like to do in my life. So he chose me among the other two shortlisted people. So that was my entry point. I was in charge of dealing with, at that point of time, the bank was very, very closed black box. So dealing with the external audience was not allowed unless from the external affairs person, which was me. So I was responsible for handling the walk-in visitors, the people looking, the researchers, the students, the journalists looking for information. And at this point of time, we could not release much information at the World Bank. Everything was confidential at that time. Before, at the end of the 90s, where the bank adopted the disclosure policy, and we started to change this policy and release information based on everybody, I mean, the the whole population. We work with the World Bank. The World Bank works with governments, local governments, because it is representing the interest of the people. So, but the people have the right to know why is the government borrowing from the World Bank? Why is it engaged in all these programs with the World Bank? How does this go? Is there a way to ensure that this money is wisely spent? Is there a way to make sure that there are no interventions for this part or the other one? And it was then a revolution in information after the disclosure policy.
You had a revolution.
Not me. It was not my decision, actually. It was the World Bank president, Wolfensohn. That was a great era because he had two episodes, 10 years, starting 1995 or so. And he really revamped the whole development mm-hmm. work and the way we worked, the system we worked. And he empowered the local offices, and that was my luck because I had the opportunity to grow up and build my capacity and look for more sophisticated endeavors within the bank.
This is really an amazing story, especially that you started only at the age of 40. This is really a story of empowerment and success. And you were part of this communication revolution, as you called it, that was initiated by the boss of the World Bank in those days, who was mm-hmm. Wolfensohn. And I think it is yeah. key that institutions like the World Bank communicate with local societies and governments communicate to their own local societies, because the programs of the World Bank, especially in those days, had a high impact, not always the easiest one for a civil society to digest all the measurements that were taken in order to stabilize, for instance, a budget of a state like Egypt. But this would be too much detail for this podcast, but it's amazing yes. that you developed out of this starting position a very nice career at the World Bank, right?
Yeah, because first, I'm a knowledge fan. So because I was the external affairs person, I had this great window of knowledge in front of me. So it was all based on knowledge, but also, of course, I had the base. I mean, I had views, I had knowledge before, lots of readings, ideas. So I knew where I was standing, and I had a stable foot to put on the ground. And also, during a certain period when I was promoted, I chose to work in operations for a while. So I worked for 3 years in operation after working with external affairs and information. I was the information officer at a certain point while the disclosure policy was growing eminently till 2010, where we went fully transparent and we changed the disclosure policy to access to information. Mm-hmm. So that was the age of information and technology and access to information. So the bank went great with it. So I contributed to all of this. And this, actually, this journey took me to different experiences where I had to work in Washington, the headquarters, in working assignments representing Arabic speakers. Since I have a very strong Arabic language, I master the language, I may say, and they wanted actually to include everyone, all mm-hmm. the translations and the pages of the bank had to be available in several languages. So there was a great move of translation at that point of time.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that our appreciated listeners already know that you are a very strong woman, and it is really impressive how inclusive you were, and also to make come true your own aspirations. And as well, it's also taking chance of opportunities, right, Nehal? You have to recognize your opportunities, and you also have to try to make the most out of it at the right time. But I always say to be able to do so, you have to have a good basic, also a good basic higher education. Otherwise, it might be difficult even to recognize this is now my window of time, and I have now to act now or to lose a good opportunity for my own career. You are a fabulous example how this can work out well. But with all the story of success that you are sharing with all of us, we are very, very thankful for that. What did you also have barriers on your way? Were there also people who were not so supportive? Did you also have to fight for some things, or was it a smooth journey?
Of course, there is nothing in life. But I first, of course, the great impediment in my journey was the society. The society and the ideas about women and empowering women and giving women opportunities for education and for work opportunities and to prove themselves, give them the ground and the tools to prove themselves. There was a mindset, a general mindset in the society that like women are and girls are to be married and take care of the children and that's it. And if you give them the chance to for education, this is in favor of the family, not for her to work and earn money and have financial independence and have her own views. And so that was the great impediment in my way, in my journey, life journey, and specifically with my mother. My mother always thought that what I was doing was wrong. And she thought that what I was doing is for males, not for females. Reading all the time, discussing all the time, having views, interfering in discussions with grown-ups. When I was a teenager, she thought that this is very inappropriate to interfere in the discussions of grown-ups. But I thought that I have ideas and I wanted to discuss why are we doing this. So that was really the most a great impediment in my life. That was really an obstacle because I had to fight alone. The rest couldn't fight or that just went with the flow. But I think that I was different from my early, not childhood, but like when I started to grow up as a teenager, I discovered that I think differently and I perceive things differently and I have different ideas and thoughts. And I always discussed social matters and behaviors. Why are we doing this and ideas? And I paid a very dear price because people did not accept this easily. But at the end, I made it. I made it and I'm proud of myself because I was perseverant and I believed in my capacity and I knew I could do it.
So we have heard before that you are on the board of trustees of CARE Egypt. And CARE Egypt made quite a transformation because it was part and it still is part of an international global confederation, but it was very important for the confederation, also most important for CARE Egypt, of course, to become a localized organization. So CARE Egypt now is really part of the global confederation, but it is independent and it is CARE Egypt like CARE Austria, let's say. You already told us what motivated you to join CARE because all our listeners know the focuses of our work, that we are very much engaged in gender equality, in the rights of women and girls, and in access to education and all the bunch of questions that come along with it. But why was it so important to become a local NGO and not be branch office of a global NGO? Can you frame that in a few words for us, Nehal?
Doing development from a local perspective is in the favor of the beneficiaries at the end. And being a local organization, we give this taste of very local challenges and the nature of the society and what can work and what cannot work. And it was also a great move in not locally only, but like in general, in the whole world, in the arena of development, that the development work should rely on local resources, local experts, get the sense of this local development touch, which is, of course, our work with the international organizations, like CARE started working in Egypt in 1954. But at that time, the idea of development was not the same as we see it now. It's like helping people help themselves, not charity, not giving them what they need. And that's it. What one stand intervention and then you go and leave them. No, development has changed a lot. And I think that CARE is one of the prominent actually organizations. And it is a school of development that everybody and whoever in Egypt is working in development must have had his road crossed with CARE at a certain point. It's either he worked with CARE or he used CARE services or he learned something from CARE. So mm-hmm. it's a great, this is why I was proud and very happy to be part of this family after I left my regular work and a position at the world.
And we are very proud to have you, as I mentioned before. The core topic, one of the core topics of CARE Egypt is women's empowerment, right? In that general sense. And we do that a lot also in rural communities. Now, we have heard when you told us about your youth, Nehal, that in those days, it was not very easy, especially for girls to speak out. Is it easier today?
CARE Egypt is very keen to include women, not only in separate programs. I mean, we have gender programs, of course, and we have programs for banning violence against women. So we have several programs, but we make sure to include women and include gender effect in every program we have.
How is this perceived by men and boys? Are they supportive or are they against it?
Not
or is it a mixed bag?
Okay. I call them wounded eagles. You are taking from their space to give somebody else, somebody that they thought all the time dependent on them. And after a while, only after women were able to prove that they are able to achieve and they are able to work efficiently and perform effectively, that some of them started to accept the idea, not only that, but also welcomed their contribution and their involvement in the work. And the best idea, I mean, the best illustration of this idea is She Feeds the World. Mm-hmm. Because She Feeds the World is in, you asked me if now the society is more receptive. It is in general, but in the rural areas and in villages, no, it is like sacred that women should stay at home and only men are able to work and support the family and they are the breadbringer, etc. But with some programs of VSLA, it all started in some of the governorates in cooperation with PepsiCo. It was a great initiative because it started at the beginning with encouraging a small number of women groups to put money together as a sort of fund for them. They contribute to this fund for them to use as a seed for some activities, economic activities that would bring some additional income to their families. They really had an impressive journey because they were able, of course, with the help of some experts that we used to help them and to train them and to supervise them and to make sure that they are following the rules properly. And they ended up now selling their potatoes to Shiksi factories because it was a very good crop at the end. What they had at the end was great, the end product. And through the years, 2-3 years only, they learned how to choose the seeds manually. They knew where to get them properly. And they were able to do contracts with other partners who were responsible for selling or marketing. And at the end, they did all this themselves. So men joined them and contributed to their work and encouraged them. In this society, I can tell you, Andrea, that it's a miracle. They were also able to improve the quality of life in their families and in their societies. Because improving lives is not only about the income or what they were able to make as money, but also changing the mindset. It's very difficult. I mean, it's a great obstacle, changing ideas. And for closed societies for centuries and centuries, as old as Egypt, you will find it a very challenging task to change people's idea.
Yeah, and this is really an impressive story. And it showed many of the tools that CARE is using when we do jointly with local civil societies and local experts globally, the so-called gender equality work. And one of the dimensions that also you mentioned is to always include also the male part of the society. This is really key. And it also helps if a program can show some economic growth and economic success, because this leads to more awareness about joint efforts, stronger rights for equality, stronger access also for women and girls to education, to markets. And this is linked to a whole universe of development at its best, I would say. And with you sharing this with us, it is clearly understandable that this has to be done locally. Of course, also as a local organization, it is key to tap into, for instance, international funding, which you did, because She Feeds the World is a global care initiative supported by the Pepsi-Cola Foundation. You mentioned it, but I'm not sure if it was understandable. And this She Feeds the World empowers rural women farmers by improving their access to resources, markets, and training. And it takes place in Egypt, Uganda, and India, and in many other countries. So this is really a global program with global results, but it worked extremely well in the setting of CARE Egypt. So when you look into a little bit into the future gets less and less predictable in these days, I would say. But what do you personally envision for CARE Egypt, let's say, in the next 5 to 10 years? What do you see? What is your guess?
Well, it's a very difficult question, Andrea, because as you rightly said, you pointed out that there is a lot of ambiguity and uncertainty and unclarity in the whole situation worldwide. So development specifically, I think there will be a great change. But 5 years from now, this is I would say that it is a transitional period. But we will have to use all our experience and knowledge of the past to find out different ways to serve the communities in cooperation with civil society and corporate social responsibility, maybe local companies and local partners, bring them more, because like, unfortunately, a lot of people, when they meet me in Egypt, and educated people and prominent, they would ask me, what is development? They don't know what development is. And they think it's charity. They still think it's charity. So shedding more light on what development is. It's helping people, supporting people help themselves mm-hmm. in the future and become productive and independent and not fully dependent on aid. So bearing this in mind, we really need to look forward, and we still are persistent in our focus on supporting local communities and development in general, and unprivileged young women that have no access to education, basic education in small villages or so. So the agenda is still big, and there is a lot to do in it. But we are not going to change our activities or our goal or our purpose in this arena, but we really need to change the way we do it, because the situation has changed globally, and we really need to recap our ideas and find out different ways to address these problems. You cannot handle the future with an old mind. We really need to rethink our way of thinking. We really need to think out of the box and maybe brainstorm on. But basically, you asked me for Care Egypt. Care Egypt, we are going. It's a transitional period where we lost several projects, but we are readjusting our program as how best to serve local communities with local partners who can support and help, not only in funding, but in shaping ways and channels of providing improved quality of life for all these beneficiaries that we are targeting.
Care Egypt will be one of the CARES also in the future who is acting in this global confederation, but will develop an even stronger focus on working with local actors, which is a good thing to do. But I think all care organizations need that balance between the global level and the strong roots in the local area where they work and where they want to achieve changes. And this is something really worthwhile to support. And it's also a call to action to our listeners of the Care in Action podcast. Today, you got a glimpse how one of the local parts of care works and functions, what the challenges are. And in supporting the work of care, you support massively localization, and you ensure together with us that all the decisions that have to be made on a local level in order to be effective are really made there. And you all see it now on the example of Care Egypt. And I really thank Nehal for the precious insights. As my closing question, and I'm sure that also many young women are listening to us, do you have an advice for a young woman of today? What is the best ingredient to have a fulfilled and happy life, be it professional, be it personal? What would you say? What is the main thing that young women should take care of?
Well, thank you for this question. If I may give an advice, I belong to maybe a different generation, but I am keen to give young girls this piece of advice, if I may.
Yes.
The fundamental, actually, part of this is for her to know herself very well. She needs to understand herself inside out very well. And this is not an easy task, and it takes some time. But she really needs to focus on what does she want? What are her capabilities? If what she wants requires more capabilities, she will need to work on improving her capacity in these fields. Believe in herself, be perseverant in her efforts, never neglect education and following up knowledge on knowledge. Now we have not windows of knowledge, but we have treasures of knowledge everywhere. So if we want to learn about anything, we really don't need to go to the faculty or have a degree. If we need to learn really, we have all the resources in front of us. So being aware, the self-awareness is a cornerstone for any person to deal with this world. If the girl understands herself well, she knows where her edge, where the powerful points in her life. And this, of course, will require some effort and time and techniques. And if she needs help, she might as well ask for help or get this help from elderly or from professional people. How to understand yourself and live in peace with yourself is fundamental in any success. So later on, what I would like to do is, am I getting the education just to get a job and this regular life, or I want to make a difference in this life? Life is a journey. We really need to add to it something tangible. And this is our role. This is why we are here. I really treasure life. So understanding yourself, understanding what is your goal and what are you looking for, making sure you have all the tools and capacity and skills to achieve that. And if you don't have them, work on them and improve them, and you will get there. Believe it in yourself.
So I think this was an excellent closing statement, and you were an excellent Care in Action podcast guest. Thank you to Nehal El-Kwezni, the chairperson of Care Egypt, for all the valuable insights. If you like our podcast, then please recommend it to your friends and families. We are happy to have you with us. And you can be sure that I'm already excited to share our next episode with you. Thank you, Nehal. Thank you, our audience. And see you soon here at Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast by Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For more information about CARE and our projects, visit care.at. There, you'll also find out how you can support our work. This podcast is made possible with the generous support of CC Real. Thank you for your commitment, which enables this series of conversations. See you next time.